Hello and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates. Nessel & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm, and I'm here with my friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nessel & Associates, and the host of the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. The ERP Organizational Change Journal seeks to share expertise, insight, and create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, and reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. It's our intention for this to be a collaboration tool and resource. We hope that you find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, discover best practices, and explore the human elements and components of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, practitioner experience of both project successes and project failures. A general review of the themes of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and critically having an awareness of tactics founded in principle is fundamental to ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, explore these approaches, and discover the principles that they are founded upon so that they may prove to be useful in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm always so excited and looking forward to fun conversations with you and our guest. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community. As we are a podcast that desires to engage in valuable insight into the world of ERP organizational change success with interviews and roundtable talk, our guests include experts and pioneers in a field, organizational stakeholders, practitioners, and researchers. Our podcast is a platform for those seeking to share, learn, and reflect on ERP organizational change success. In this episode, we will discuss optimized ERP with Mr. Greg Shoemaker. Greg is principal at Business Performance Integrated. Business Performance Integrated is a consultancy focused on assisting small to mid-sized companies develop business strategies to integrate critical processes, data, and systems along with business intelligence to improve business performance and optimize capacity. So this week, we will further discuss some key influences to ERP optimization, including ERP software selection, ERP Center of Excellence, ERP Architecture Optimization Assessment, ERP Functional Optimization Assessment, Project Management, Change Management, Manufacturing Financial Management, and additionally, we will examine capacity optimization, integration of processes, data, and systems, and strategic business planning, process analysis, and improvement. Listeners, we just wanted to insert a note here that the audio for the first two questions wasn't very clear. We apologize for that. If you could bear with us through the first couple of questions, we think you'll find that the audio improves for the third question and for the duration of the interview. Thank you. Hey, Greg, thank you very much for being on our show today.
Thank you, Jack. I'm glad to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, you bet. You're very welcome. Looking forward to this conversation here. So, all right, let's get started. Let's dive in. The first question, Greg, and I'd like to ask a lot of the practitioners this question, and that is, how would you define ERP?
Well, Jack, what I would say, just to kind of note it out, I always characterize it with my clients, is it's basically a systematic way to integrate the company's processes and systems through some tried and true systematic approach. And I always sometimes use analogies. I grew up in the car business at General Motors many years ago and many gray hairs ago, but I basically kind of people can relate to their cars, and some people love them more than others, as you and I have talked in the past. But if you think about the different functions of a car, such as the engine, ignition, transmission, heating and air conditioning, there's a lot of different systems akin to a lot of different processes that companies have. So I think the difference of an ERP system is it integrates these functions together. And if you think of a car and you're moving down the road, all these systems have to operate together or else you have a problem. The transmission has to rotate in sync with the engine or else you got gears getting ground up, or you're sitting there revving the engine and if the transmission isn't in sync, guess what? You're not going anywhere. So I think companies, I kind of make that akin to companies that do not have ERP and disparate systems or manual processes. You know, all they see is the input they get and the output they give to some other group. They never have a real view of the whole system, and it's very hard to make that things to work together that way. So with little visibility upstream or downstream, it's kind of hard to improve your processes. I'm kind of a student of Dr. Deming, and he always said, you can't improve what is unstable. So it's very hard to improve an unstable system or process. So like cars, you know, companies that don't have ERP systems, they may sputter along, they're going to stall out along the way. So I think of ERP as a way of having a master control for the business, just like you have an engine control computer to coordinate all of the different functions and pass the data between systems so they can work together. You want a system that kind of optimizes moving the business along, you know, just like a car, to move from point A to point B in a pretty optimal manner. So that's kind of the way I think about systems. Let's integrate the processes together because the capability's out there in ERP.
Sure. What a great analogy, Greg. Thanks. I've never heard that one before. That makes sense. Nice analogy. So, Greg, a significant emphasis from Business Performance Integrated, your business, is on effective strategic planning, or what we call in the business SBP. What role does SBP play in ERP organizational change? And just to add a question on top of a question, SBP is critical in driving decisions to meet business objectives with key initiatives that prioritize resource usage. But can you explain with our listeners the real value of effective SBP and how you go about that?
Okay. I think it's a great question, Jack. Basically, strategic planning provides the framework to engage the business objectives and kind of gives a roadmap, the way I look at it, just to use another car analogy, on what are the changes needed to support that direction. So we want to take this trip, and along the way, here's what we need to do to get there. Business strategies are directional in nature. They may or may not be correct. It's kind of a test. So in simple terms, we look at strategic planning as the key pillars, or some people call them imperatives, and you can always use those to balance against any given decision. For a sanity check, say, does it meet what I'm trying to do with this business? So the value is to keep the organization really focused on these strategic initiatives that are spawned out of the strategic business plan, and there may be a lot of alternatives to consider and form a planning process, and it really starts with the leadership. They've got to provide the direction. Here's where we want to go with this system, and let's get a process enabled. Let's get the strategic direction, the strategic initiatives lined up. One of them could be, let's execute a system that can integrate our processes, for example. That's a supporting initiative. So a good example, I think, is for a strategic initiative could be integrating the supply chain through a use of systems that connect my company, our clients, with their suppliers. And there's technology that is out there to do that. And so basically, it's kind of expanding ERP into the supplier network. But the main tenet on this planning is to make sure the organization's engaged and energized, staff properly and enabled for these changes. And in this case, the systems basically provide an enabling factor. You know, we want to optimize how we process our orders as fast, as quickly as possible. And therefore, we're going to need to connect to our suppliers so we know what his inventory levels are that I'm ordering from.
So suppose you're leading a kickoff meeting for an organization that is just starting an ERP implementation. And again, I really like to ask this question to many of our guests, but how would you define and describe for them success in terms of ERP organizational change?
Okay. I guess what I would say, Jack, is a successful implementation basically starts with the ownership and executive sponsor is a key factor. and lay out, you know, a plan of what's to be accomplished. When you go into a customer, the objective shouldn't be, let's implement ERP A or ERP B. It's, what do you really want to do with this system from a business standpoint? A few years back, I led a team that implemented ERP for a North American automaker who was basically distributing their cars in Europe and South America, and they did not have a distribution system to do that. So the mission was very clear. We had to enable the core supply chain functions and enable all those supporting elements, transportation, purchasing, warehousing, but it had to be done in a six-month period. And this was one of the more complex ERP systems, so that was basically saying, we're going to have to go warp speed. But it was very clear what had to be done, and we set up a good executive sponsorship committee with stakeholders, and so we had to make decisions very fast. Basically, one thing we had to lay out is there's really not time for any customization or nice-to-have functions. We got to be able to distribute cars in Europe and South America on January 1st. So we had to make a decision, let's go with out of the box, and what we're going to do is make sure that the processes fit the best practices in the ERP system. So it did require frequent upward and downward communication. In this kickoff meeting, that has to be clear. A critical factor is really also setting up, defining the team, training the team on the roles required on their team on the project, because it's a huge change management challenge, as you know, being in this business, especially using an ERP system for the first time. So the mission here was to take away the mystery, help folks really achieve control and capability in their jobs. And with a lot of speed bumps and challenges along the way, we got this thing live and operating in these two geographies in 6 months and a manageable level of issues, which there's always going to be. It certainly generates a lot of angst along the way, but it's pretty satisfying when you can bring about a change like this, because this particular client was not going to sell cars in Europe unless they had this system up and running. And so it was very clear what the objective was, and we had to basically focus on those core objectives along the way and not be distracted by a lot of changes and nice-to-have type functions.
Greg, I know you have great experience, and I know you have tenure in the field, that you've been doing this a long time. But how would you describe, not just your specific experience, Greg, but what is your general understanding of ERP implementation success rates in the field? So just based on your own work, anecdotal evidence, yeah, case studies of others, research and whatnot, what would you say? And maybe let me start by asking, is success 80-20, 50-50? And I know this is a very general statement. In terms of ERP organizational success, how many of those are successful?
Well, if you look on some of the data that's out there, some of the internet sources that track this, they say 50 to 65% roughly are deemed successful. Of course, it depends on what your criteria for successful.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there's a lot of elements to that, Jack. But yeah, my view is that that is a little overstated based on my experience. And again, my experience is definitely tilted, shaded, if you will, because my company, Business Performance Integrated, many times we come in to help companies fix problems that were not perhaps done optimally by their integrators. So we come in and we kind of see the results of that. So could be right, 50 to 65%, but I think it's somewhat less than that. There's so many challenges that companies have to get these core functions. It's you know, some people may refer to it as atomic nutcracker. It does a lot of things. And
yeah,
in many cases, the integration is so tedious to set up. They very rarely go in without any issues. But given that, like that last example I used, you know, I think if you can get 85% of the functionality working in a stable manner, then you have a manageable amount to fix. If it's 50%, that's kind of overwhelming, but just like managing any type of a process, if you can manage the exceptions and then focus the energy on those functions, I think it's important to prioritize what are the critical things you have to have done here. You know, we got to be able to produce orders. One analogy, or one just a little color, we had a large global plastic manufacturer, and they put in an ERP system. It did not go well, and they weren't able to fulfill orders or keep on schedule to automotive OEMs, which is a big deal, for about 6 months. So we basically came in to look at the culprits and focus. You got to be able to manage your inventories. You got to have good product master data. You can't have missing interfaces to connect let's say this particular company had third-party warehouse systems. There's got to be a solid two-way interface. Another area of staffing is where people have problems with training. In this customer, in case they had their training 6 months ahead of the go-live, therefore, as you know, training fades if you don't use it right away. Probably shouldn't have been more than 2 weeks ahead of time. It's good to have training early, but there's got to be refreshers before people start putting in transactions for their functions. So I think the key here is to kind of choreograph the training, plan it, the support team, make sure it's adequate. People know their job responsibilities, the changes in the process, which gets into change management. The master data, that's a usual suspect there. Make sure that is all set up and complete. And so using the car analogy, I say, you know, it's the service department. Also, you got to have day-to-day mechanics. Things are not going to go right at certain points in time. So you got to have these mechanics that are in place to fix issues. But you also have to have engineers available if there's a particular process that isn't working because the software design was not set up properly. And that can happen.
Yeah.
So you don't want to, just to go back to cars, you don't want to have a vehicle recall. You want to make sure that we keep this this system running and make it the manageable few that you can manage and make this thing a success.
Yeah, that's great insight, Greg. And I'm telling you, I'm going to borrow that car analogy. That's nice.
Please
I like
do.
That.
Well, you do. We both love cars.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and what Greg meant by that, listeners, is that he had a really nice Pontiac GTO, I must add. And I'm a Mustang lover myself, a classic Mustang lover. But anyways, Greg, I heard a couple of things there in your response that I just want to share with our listeners. And one that I heard is the way I would distill it would be on two things. Is really being honest about the realities and expectations from the onset. I think I would summarize a couple of your sentences in response to that question in that just being honest about the realities and expectations, because at the end of the day, you do that and it leads to greater success, right? If you're not honest from the onset, that creates problems. And so I think you referenced that. But the other thing is this idea of subjectivity when it comes to understanding success, right? Because a lot of people, their experience is different, their knowledge, you know, they may not have been there, done that with ERP implementation. So their perception can be very subjective in terms of what success is and how it's defined. And I think that what you're alluding to here is you have to make that objective, right? You have to take something that's really kind of hard to see and kind of invisible and hard to gauge and more subjective and make it as objective as possible. And you do that with identifying clear goals and understanding of what success is. You know, it could be, well, we're on budget, and or it could mean just getting it done on time, and or it could mean getting everything done on budget on time, but meet the functionality, right? Living up to the scope. And some organizations actually that I've interviewed before, both formally and informal research, is their definition of success was just general consensus from the organization that was successful. So it wasn't really based on timer. I thought it was very interesting, but it's just the general perception, which I think can cause problems. But one way to get around that is to have objective, concrete KPIs and metrics, right? So you have before and after snapshot, which is one way of identifying success. You live up to your expected KPIs, you know, post-implementation.
Exactly. Now, people do respond to seeing numbers, and actually it's a kind of a motivator to see we've made this progress and here's the issues that people can understand. You know, we've had this many severity ones and we've knocked it down in half. And I think that's can be a motivating factor in a lot of project teams. So I'm with you. I hear you 100%.
Yeah. So I just to slightly change gears here, if on a scale of 1 to 10, and 1 being doesn't really matter to 10 being absolutely critical, what is the value you would place on the actual ERP software selection process? How important is that to success?
I'd say it's a definite 10. If it was a higher number, I'd give it that as well. The reason I say that, Jack, is unlike a typical purchase decision, this is a decision that companies are going to live with for many, many, many years, possibly decades. Yeah. Plus, it's a daunting, expensive thing to do in some cases to replace and transition. You can't say in 5 months, I really don't like this. I'm going to go back to what I had. The old system isn't there anymore, and to transition to another system is outrageously time-consuming and expensive, and tearing the organization up for X number of months is not a good thing. Another difference is putting in these systems, they provide basically the process framework, and that's the enabler of the business processes. So it's not like one product or one part you're buying. These ERP systems, they basically run all the business processes. Therefore, it's pretty darn important to spend the time up front to select the right one. And they all aren't alike. There's differences in the way that data integrates. Some people think ERP systems, they integrate all datas, all data elements and all tables. Not the case in some. The functionality varies, the differences in capability to support things like engineer to order, discrete manufacturing can be different. There's a lot of differences in the quality and capability of the interfaces between some core modules. They may have acquired a certain function and knitted it together with an interface. One example I use is we had in one of the very top two or three ERP systems, the CRM functionality had an internal interface between the core enterprise functions. And this was a weak link within the ERP system. So it was a limiting factor on how many transactions could run through this interface. So truly a weak link, and interfaces can do that. So in summary, I would just say it's important to spend the time, the energy, and focus on making sure the ERP system selection process is comprehensive and it's a good match for your business. And if you do that, I think there's going to be an infinite return on that investment in time and cost to pick the right system.
Absolutely. So you think that the time, money, and effort on the front end and the emphasis that you place on selection can pay dividends down the road?
Oh, my gosh. And some will happen very quick. Some people find out there's a lack of functionality that shows up very fast. So let's sort all those unknowns out so nobody's surprised, and it's going to really do what you want it to do. And then there's literally hundreds of ERP systems out there. You really need to sort through and the wheat from the chaff, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. I think there's nearly, just for discrete manufacturing alone, there's like 100 ERP vendors from your, you know, what we call our tier ones down to your niche players and everything in between. They're all different. The way they model their business, what they identify as best practices, their functionality, and not to mention their implementation approach and, you know, all these other variables, non-functional variables. And it makes a difference, you know, at the end of the day. So I agree with you. We certainly at NNA, NS and Associates, we would give it a 10, or if it was a higher number, we'd give it a higher number. It's an absolutely critical part of the process.
Yeah, we're on the same page.
So the next question, you and I actually spoke about before on a call, and you actually, I believe it's one of your blogs, you discussed this idea, Greg, of the ERP Center of Excellence. Mm-hmm. Can you share with our listeners what that is and what's its value?
The best thing I can do, Jack, is just share my experience. I was part of the management group of a Center of Excellence of a large global software services hardware company, and I'll just kind of structure how we did it and recap it on a summarized kind of basis. But I think there's a couple different components of it. One is basically you've got to be able to provide the support on a much more comprehensive basis on a regular system. And there's so many functioning parts of these ERP systems. What we did is we had, you hear the term super user, we called that the level zero support level to provide functional guidance within the department, so to speak. You know, if you're in procurement, here's the super user procurement guy. If you're in engineering, here's the super user engineer. And they can cover perhaps, you know, say 75% of the issues that people encounter because they have more in-depth knowledge. But then you need the level one support. I guess the biggest analogy there would be a traditional help desk that you get when you call up in this particular functionality, or I need to change my password, I can't access my system, those types of basic issues. You need a level one there. Then you need we had a level two for any functional and technical issues where the functionality, it looked like a bug in the software, either the software itself or the way it was configured was a problem. And sometimes this involves a development team to make a fix there. Finally, level three, and you can see the skill level keeps increasing here. for any design changes. We realized we had a poor design point, and we need the functionality that really provides what we need for this process. And therefore, level three needs to involve the business users and the maybe the internal consultants, or if people are using external consultant, to really let's reconfigure this process to make this work as we need it. And then finally, level four is, you know, ERP, there are bugs in the code itself, and we find those. So you need a partnership with that ERP provider, and they always have a nice maintenance contract for you to sign. And you will likely need to use that to get certain bugs fixed that you can't handle, because the core code has to be changed. And then that's why they have ongoing releases for bug fixes. Another critical success factor of these functionality of these center of excellence is basically the prioritize the effort. You know, you have processes that, if they're not a critical process, order fulfillment for one, and something happens and the process is broken and there's no workaround, we call that a SEV 1. It's got to be fixed or we can't process orders for our customer, for example. Then the next level down would be, hey, it's a critical process, but we got a workaround, so we can have some time to prioritize a fix for that. That would be a SEV 2, the way we did it, and a SEV 3 for issues that stop non-critical processes or improve the functionality, but they didn't really stop the core business functions. Level 4 for other changes, for improvements, and the current process was working okay, but we wanted to really improve it somewhat, but it's not a critical process. So it's kind of prioritizing the functions, the workload of the group, so they're working on the most important things and keeping the business running. And one last critical function performed by the Center of Excellence, Jack, is let's look forward to the future. Just like in the car business, you have new models, new functionality required, or a function that was originally deferred due to timing or other reasons. So you got to have a team that works that, and that's what the Center of Excellence will do. There's database upgrades at times. There's rollouts to new geographies. Maybe we started with North America, and we want to roll out Europe based on that experience. So you need a center of excellence to really manage that talent and work with the new geography to bring this system live. There's business divestitures that happen, and those change the landscape because you've got to carve out a business. And this is a very tough thing to do, to basically carve out pieces of the business. And that's why it's important to plan it out, to look at the business like someday this particular business could be divested, or I need to consolidate certain functions. So there's some ways that you can set up your controlling structure to mitigate how much tear up there is. So anyway, I think the importance here to net it out is the Center of Excellence is basically it provides the service department for the ERP landscape, and the transformational change is really the equivalent of vehicle engineering, departments that are really designing and managing the new functionality. And this Center of Excellence can have the effect of keeping the wheels on the system, keeping the functional organization moving with a service level that minimizes vehicle, you know, any incidents or system outages that you may have. There's always going to be some level of issues, but the goal is to keep it manageable and address them very quickly with this Center of Excellence.
Yeah. I like that, Greg. You know, and I really like the idea and the name alone, ERP Center of Excellence. I think it sends a strong message to the organization that ERP organizational change is about continuous improvement. And I think it also helps send a message, you know, everything that you just described, but, you know, again, it starts with the name and the purpose of this ERP Center of Excellence, because I think it helps send a message that ERP ROI, or return on investment, is an iterative process. It's a continuous iterative process, right? And you get better and better with implementing processes as you described, but it sends a clear message in my mind. Everything you just described, and then right up to the name of the Center of Excellence, ERP Center of Excellence, I think is advocating and helping to send that message. So that's great. You know, so Greg, I know you and your practice emphasize this idea of optimization. And as you know, ERP implementation success is about not just ERP implementation, right, but effective and efficient ERP implementation, as well as ERP functional optimization. What can you share with our listeners in terms of ERP functional optimization? I know that's a core part of your practice. So what can you share with us?
A couple points there, Jack. I think one thing is that we always stress is let's use the functionality that's available in the system. I'll give you an example. We recently had a client who was struggling in their order to cash area, and we helped them stabilize. The first thing is let's stabilize the critical functions. So after doing that, we started looking at other areas of the business. And one particular area they had a room full of people using spreadsheets. And this is a very large global plastics company doing claim and disputes management. So there may have been 10 or 12 people, and they had somewhere around $20 million of claims, because what companies do, they don't necessarily short pay. If there's an issue, they don't pay. So, even if it was a $100 issue on a significant PO, you know what happens. So we basically showed them that, hey, there is a functionality in your ERP system. It's case-based, and it'll help manage claims and disputes and link all the key documents together, sales orders, invoices, supply chain transactions that you need to manage these claims and determine the eventual outcome. They were not aware of this. Even though they had a large internal ERP group, they weren't aware of this functionality, so we helped them implement this, and then they were able to reassign about 75% of that claims team to other parts of the business. So I think the key thing there is use the capability that exists and get out of manual processes as much as possible. A second point, I think, in the optimization theme here is really managing the performance by utilizing, similar to what you mentioned earlier, Jack, the data from the system, whether it's the cycle time of the process, the utilization on the shop floor, or other process metrics. And, ERP systems provide some basic reporting capability. It may be adequate and it may not be. I think the new news here is these data analytic packages that basically use the data in the ERP system, to stick with the automotive analogies, they can help turbocharge the automation of the performance management. So these, with memory being so inexpensive and these data analytic packages having such good capability these days, including the workflow, we basically had a client that they were spending hours every morning extracting data on their work orders every day. It was an aerospace company. They're all built around work orders. On what their labor and material status was, outstanding material, labor that hasn't been completed yet on the work order, and they were having to extract this, manipulate it, keep people spending a lot of time every morning. So basically, we recommended a data analytic package. It sucked in the data and basically gave them a collective aggregated view of, hey, here's the list of materials that are past due, here's the labor that is way past due, and kind of a way to prioritize where they focus their organizational labor effort and also their procurement department. In fact, they also set up parameters saying, hey, anything past 2 days, here's a workflow note that goes out to that procurement purchasing agent or directly to the supplier. So there's a good way to help automate your business to really kind of take ERP and really using the integration of the ERP system to basically have a better way of managing performance, make it more automated, dashboards, et cetera, so management can spend the time on those few items that aren't under control and make their job much more manageable.
I love this idea of functional optimization. I think we may have you back again to spend some more time on that topic, because, at the end of the day, it kind of goes back to the previous question. ERP Center of Excellence and, functional optimization too, as you just kind of described to our listeners, sometimes, all that takes time, right? It takes time, and there's natural part of the evolution of your investment. And there's a lot there. I think you did a great job summarizing this idea of functional optimization. I think there's a lot there that someday I'd like to unpack a little bit more with you.
I'd be glad to do that.
So, Greg, from your experience implementing ERP, what would you say are the most critical aspects of ERP implementation project management specifically? Obviously, project management and methodology is significant. But if you just had to reflect for a minute here and just share with our listeners, what are the most critical aspects in terms of project management, what would you say?
Well, I'd say there's a couple key items here, Jack. I think one of them, and I'm thinking from the top of the organization down, there's got to be alignment with the business leadership to direct this project management team on what's important, what are the imperatives we want happening with this project, and making sure there's communication, you know, from the executive team to the functional management team and then to the team that's basically implementing the project. So you need a good communication vehicle. We kind of utilize a stakeholder management process, and we found that in this case, having one-on-ones is a really good thing to do. You know, you may have 8 or 10 stakeholders to deal with, and it helps surface any respective functional direction that they have in their minds that they may not be that verbal with in a group setting. So we try to find out those issues, and then we debrief on it, and then we look for, hey, where's their out of alignment here? These guys may not know it, there's a lack of alignment necessarily, but we're kind of looking ahead to make this, you know, where you have to be in full agreement on. We kind of look where those gaps are and then try to surface the potential conflicts with the appropriate groups there and continue to do a continuity check on those areas of disconnect and try to find the common ground to agree on. It could be a geographic thing. It could be a functional issue, a number of different things. So it's important to get those things flattened. Another critical aspect is having a good change management process, because you're going to have unknowns in this project, things that come up after the project starts. Also, sometimes the dangerous thing is the functional guys get more knowledge of the capability. They may want to continually try to change the business requirements and needs, and you got to have some stability there. So it's important to have a good change management team to kind of surface the impact on the project schedule, the impact on the business processes, and, you know, all the criteria needs to be laid out on the table. What's the impact on budget? Is there risk to the integrity of the system if they try to customize some functionality? And you want to make sure that system integrity stays in place. I guess the last piece I'd talk about as being critical is making sure there's the team members are in place in all the different areas. You know, it's usually good practice to have a team lead in each function, or in super users that represent the business functions to the overall team. Need a development team for any potential interfaces or conversions that have to be done. Security authorization is very important. Make sure we don't have any job conflicts between functions. Data migration, make sure there's good data migration capability in place. Also, if the infrastructure, whether it's traditional on-premises or in the cloud, make sure that support is in place. And then the things that have to happen, everybody has a laptop, everybody has their security access on time, office space, team rooms, et cetera. So there's just a bevy of, I think, success factors for the project managers. But connecting with the leadership to make sure the direction is clear to the project team is definitely one of the top ones, Jack.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in an earlier question, Greg, we discussed success rates in general. And so to maybe ask the same question in a slightly different way as well, you know, I think your practice has stepped in to save the day, so to speak, with ERP implementations. But why do you think many ERP projects fail to deliver on expectations?
Well, just continuing that last comment, I would say number one is the lack of involvement and buy-in from key functional stakeholders, because that's kind of a governing factor for their teams. And if they aren't fully bought in, it's a lower priority for their team members and lower prioritization. So guess what? Things get put on the back burner and progress doesn't happen in those areas. A second area is, just to also go back to the last one, inadequate change management process. If you can't control the changes, things can get out of sync very quickly. Another big one we run into is a forced go live date. And if there's no alternative, you got to make it happen. That's the case. But sometimes it's a forced one. Say, we're only going to limit this to X number of months, and it's really going to take X plus 3 months when the project management team laid it out, and not enough time for requirement development, testing, and training. And testing is a big one. Cutting off testing early to go live is never a good idea, and it ends up forcing changes in production, and you want to avoid that as much as possible. I'd say one other area, Jack, is poor data conversion. We had a client recently. They did not convert all of their inventory. They referred to it as legacy inventory. And that means to do that right, you got to be running two systems, and then somewhere you got to sync them up. And that's a bad idea. And they paid for it dearly. Inability to ship orders to some key customers, and ended up losing some of those customers. I think incomplete master data I mentioned earlier, trying to get critical mass of that, and then trying to do the rest as the system is live is not a good practice by rushing the date. So the master data, you know, is kind of the blood supply of the system.
Yeah.
And you got to make sure that's certainly right. There's always going to be some missing ones, but you want to minimize that as much as possible. And then finally, I'd say training that doesn't adequately cover the job functions, or as I mentioned earlier, you got to sync up the timing of the training so people can use it in a reasonable amount of time, or else it fades if there's not a refresher session. And people basically are drawing on the project team, which slows the project team down or whatever they're doing. So they're usually on hands on deck in some type of post-production support. So it's never a good idea to divert the project team for training as you go live. Those are just a summary. There's probably a lot of additional ones, but those are the ones we typically run into quite a bit. I'm sure you've seen the same ones.
Yeah. No, those are great, Greg. And, you know, I agree. One thing that's kind of near and dear to my heart is the idea of training and the idea of learning and development, or L&D. And, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunities in our practice around training. But I do think a lot of plans are, they don't give enough consideration to training and effective training and transformation of that training, or I should say transfer of that training to the workplace. You know, it's one thing to sit in a training environment with a UAT, user acceptance testing, or a CRP, conference room pilot, in a very controlled environment. And then one day you hit the switch and now they're running a business on this new system. You know, it kind of puts things in a different perspective, right? And so being able to have effective training that you can transfer to the workplace post go live is sometimes easier said than done. But the other thing, Greg, is this idea of data migration, you know, the same thing. I think that's a significant job, and it can be a very iterative process. And what we see is in research, especially, is data migration in terms of time and effort is often drastically underestimated. And then lastly, can you share with our listeners, you'd mentioned buy-in a couple of times and this idea of gaining buy-in. Can you maybe share just one tactical point of advice on how you can actually do that? What may Greg do to help to promote this idea of buy-in tactically?
Yeah, one technique that we use, or tactic, Jack, is a little bit of education. You need to educate some senior executives and as well as the team of, here's the value of what's going to happen with this integration. They may not be able to see that. So I think some of it is saying some organizations may have to do a little more work in one area of the end-to-end process, but it's going to show, this is what it's going to do to improve the overall process and therefore the overall business results. So I think that's one tactic to get buy-in. The one thing we were using are these one-on-one sessions to basically surface the true issues of alignment. And if we can get those on the table and address them early on, it's like finding a problem. It may be 10% of the time and energy to address it than it is later on after the system is in production.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like what you said is the educate part. You know, my view, and this is just my opinion, but, you know, I view what we do as practitioners, where our job is really 25% computer science or IT or technology, 25% business or, you know, business process engineering, but 50% educator. That's an hour conversation right there, but that's a great point. I know this next question, Greg, is a pretty loaded question, and I apologize, but I just want to get your initial response. But what do you think, what role does the overall corporate culture play in ERP organizational change, and why?
Well, I guess I would say there, Jack, that the way the organizations perform their roles, if they're not using ERP, sometimes it tends to be, they tend to operate in functional silos. And sometimes that's to the detriment of other functions. I think going back to Dr. Deming, he always used the imagery of the travel department and the salesman on the road to try to sell some business, and the travel constraints said he had to fly there the morning of the meeting. So he gets up at 0:30 and takes a plane, and he gets to the meeting. He barely makes the meeting. He's disheveled. He hasn't had his breakfast, and it doesn't go well. So, you know, multiple million-dollar deals maybe can hinge on some department trying to save the expense of an overnight stay in a hotel. So the idea is to not think in silos, but to basically look at the whole picture. And I think in ERP, the mindset is you have to think about the end-to-end process. And in all fairness to people, they have not had that visibility. They deal with the people, the functions that input their parts of the process, and who their so-called customer is in the organization of their output. So that mindset's hard to do. So I think the transformational change is one to basically educate people on how to get that broader view. And sometimes you do that through differences in metrics. And a lot of times it needs to be by the executive team to basically say, we need to do it because of this. I think if people understand the rationale, they certainly can increase their buy-in. And therefore, these days of decentralized type operations and individual departmental focus, that was the former process. We're going to move to more of a integrated team that looks at the whole process. And we understand if an upstream or downstream component doesn't happen right, it basically affects everybody along that process stream. So I think one of the biggest challenges is the fear of individuals, fear of losing their job due to inherent efficiency of ERP systems, and just the natural fear of change that people have. I've done this this way in my job for 20 years. That's what I know. Therefore, this system must be able to replicate that function the way I do it. And so it's like you said, it's an educational process to try to say, hey, but if you do it this way, it's going to save you X amount of time, kind of take away the fear of losing their jobs. There's going to be jobs in the future, and we're going to put you in a growth part of the business if your job does not end up being in the new landscape. So I think it's all about communication, try to mitigate those fears and change the mindset of how people think about the end-to-end process of what they're involved with.
Absolutely. Yeah, great comments on organizational culture, Greg. I appreciate that. I would like to circle back with you on your comment that you mentioned about learning and education. What about training and learning development or L&D in the organization, right? I mean, to what extent do you suggest and encourage opportunities for training and learning before, during, and post-implementation?
Okay, I'll just take those in order. That before, I really encourage clients to basically increase the knowledge that they have prior to the implementation, and it kind of has an effect of taking away the mystery and helping them prepare for change by getting familiar with this new animal called ERP. So, you know, any core navigation training is always a good thing. You know, these screens look different. There's kind of a time function here. The more they see it, the more they can learn to appreciate it. So I think that can be done ahead of time. And then just ahead of the implementation, I think it's important to get the role-based training. Many ERP packages are now role-based. And so people can understand, hey, what's this going to look like for my job? We recommend a best practice is to use train the trainer for a couple reasons. People usually respond better to having one of their own deliver the training. They can say, you know, this person's lived my job. They understand it. They understand the corporate lingo. And since they understand that, they can help people transition from the old world to the new world, the new processes. It's a little more digestible having their own show them how to do it versus a third-party consultant sometimes. And then finally, I think in post-implementation, it's good to have a capability there to deliver refresher training. Sometimes go-lives get delayed. So you want to have ability to have a refresher course for people if, you know, they took the training 2 weeks before the go-live day. Whoops, the go-live day moved. That happens. And then also handle turnover, new functionality being rolled out, and other required changes. You know, I think those are the key points. There's different aspects of the training during the life of the project.
Absolutely. And does the training, obviously, as we've discussed before, you know, that's functional training, but also as well as this idea of training conceptually, right? The spirit of ERP and, you know, not just the fingers to the keyboard, functional training with a specific platform, but also training on the conceptual spirit of the ERP solution itself. And also training on the realities and expectations of an ERP organizational change effort, which both of those points you've alluded to earlier in the conversation, but, you know, very much a part of the training effort.
Great point.
This next question, Greg, goes into the organizational culture bucket that we just were talking about here earlier. But when you go through an ERP organizational change process, and I have to admit, I've asked the same question to many of our guests, but are there any conflicts, or is it more typical that every single implementation is kumbaya and everyone's happy?
No, there's there's always some level, I think, of conflict here as we go forward with clients. And it's different varying degrees. Just a way of example, we had, again, I'll just keep with this large global plastic manufacturer, and we encountered several differences in the way the different geographies between Europe and South America and the Mideast wanted to handle, in this case, credit and collection process. And so the challenge was sorting out, let's kind of sort out what's really unique to the region. In some cases, there's laws that change the process in the Mideast. So you want to make sure we don't break any laws, but we want to keep the practice as common as possible. And we found out a lot of geographies, they're good at saying this is a local regional requirement, but we have to test that out versus this is the way we've always done it, driver. But at the end of the day, in this case, we worked out the kinks, so to speak, and we, you know, kind of distilled what was really truly a regional requirement versus the way they did it before. And in many cases, we had some folks not happy, but basically it kept the integrity of having a common credit and collection process. We ended up, I would say, at the end with a kumbaya moment there. I think the other thing, Jack, is I think if you get the organization around the objective, and we had to do this on this Warp Speed project to get this automotive manufacturer functionality in place at the one example. We had a good change process, and we met the goals, and we got them going. So I think the net message here is, you know, there's always going to be issues. I think if you have a good organizational change management to basically remediate and flatten the issues in a manner that keeps the integrity of the functional processes in place, I think that's the key. And then have some way of monitoring that along the way, you know, to make sure that the puppies don't get out of the box and, you know, that there's some kind of communication. And it's good to have the super users. One client, we formed a super user group, and that's another way to find out what's really happening. It also passed back latest training and refresher training. So it had a kind of a dual purpose. So there's a lot of little techniques that can be used, but at the end of the day, you know, you want to make sure people can do their work and they can relate how they did do it before to the new process, the new world, so to speak, for the overall process.
So, Greg, as you know, I study leadership heavily, and since you've realized a great deal of success in your practice, what leadership styles or attributes would you say were most prevalent during the best of your ERP implementation experiences? So if you had to take a step back and reflect upon the organizational leadership team in those implementations that were most successful, is there a common denominator or any trends that you notice?
Sure. I'd say a couple things come to mind, Jack. I'd say one leadership trait to be successful is having the mindset to be flexible enough to adapt to the changes that occur. There will be some changes, some major, some more minor, and that sometimes you have to adapt to that. You can't have such a rigid mindset that this is the only way to get this done. Sometimes you have to step in and perhaps take a slight detour to get to the end result versus a frontal attack, so to speak. Given that, I do think you have to have a do whatever it takes a mindset as well, without killing the team, but letting people know here's what has to be done, get their support and find out any issues, what it takes to move on to the next task. I think of when I helped the BMW manufacturing operation startup about 25, 26 years ago, and our president there had a phrase, you know, we had all kinds of challenges, a new car, new paint, new employees, new location, new everything. And we had our share of issues, but when there was issues, he usually pulled out his favorite phrase that he used was FIDO, which stood for fix it and drive on. So I think that's the mentality you have to have sometimes. And,
yeah.
And you know, you got to know where to prioritize the battles. There is a limit to the organizational energy, resources, money. So I think it's important to balance this out as best as possible. So that's the flexibility point. And I guess the last point I had was sometimes you have to get traction with the team and you have to make sure you acknowledge their contributions. One early one I did was a large aircraft manufacturer, and we found out the team, usually you read the literature, says make sure there's a bonus structure for the team as the project goes live. This particular customer did not have that. So we just said, what can we do? So we coordinated with the client project manager, and we started a thing we called the Yellow Jersey Award, like the Tour de France, you know, who's wearing the yellow jersey. And we did it on a weekly basis. Every Friday, we had a criteria of, you know, the highest percentage of their deliverables, or if we were in testing, the highest percentage of test cases to their goal. And the person that was leader, we kept track of it, and they got to wear that yellow jersey all day on Friday. And it was a simple thing, but it really generated a lot of camaraderie and a lot of competition. And I think it did. These folks made sure they had their best effort on these deliverables. And then we had a little ceremony on Friday, and it was kind of the highlight of the week. It didn't cost much at all. It did acknowledge their contributions, which is key. So the pressure and intensity, as you know, these projects can be very draining. So find a way to take the edge off that was what we tried to do. And so that's a couple things that stand out. People sometimes feel underappreciated.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Greg, because you didn't say the word, but you certainly described it in terms of leadership, and that's empathy, being in tune with your workforce. And it is, like you said, I mean, it's to a certain degree, it's basic economics in that there's limits and constraints to time, money, and effort. And also the idea that issues happen, right?
Yep.
And fight, all right? Fix it and drive on. And I think good transformational leaders know those points. That's very interesting. You definitely described to me in this answer this idea of empathy. And that's very interesting to me because that's a very much a recurring theme in my work and studying leadership.
That's
fascinating. Yeah. So I'm going to put you on the spot here for a second and say you can only choose four, right? You and I know, you know better than I do from your work that there's more than four. But if you can only choose four, what would you say are the most critical success factors that facilitated your success? So you, Greg, you personally, nobody else but you, what are the four success factors that help you and your practice facilitate success and have the greatest impact?
Okay, that's a good question. I would say one is to, I always try to develop a working relationship with the key client team, the client executive, the project manager from the client, so we could get a shared mindset on what needed to be done and develop that relationship, you know, go to lunch and make sure, you know, it's easier to work with somebody that you feel that you know versus you don't know, and you don't have a maybe the understanding of what they're going through, because it sure helps. Sometimes you got to draw on that when challenges happen, and as you know, they are going to happen. So you've got some relationship capital, so to speak, to spend when those disagreements happen. But workmanship is important. I think another one is working with the team dynamics and leveraging, you know, leveraging how that team responds. Like I said, the example I used about the yellow jersey, these guys are aeronautic guys. They're kind of like cowboys, and so they like competition. So we kind of harnessed that a little bit and said, you know, let's harness that dynamics a little bit. So at the end of the day, we can say, hey, we went live yesterday and nothing major broke. So that's usually a success point. I think another one, I enjoyed the challenge. It's a pretty complex puzzle, as you know, a lot of moving parts, a lot of moving pieces that got to sync up together, making sure you engage the right folks, the right tools, the right software, data migration tools, et cetera. So when you get done this puzzle, it kind of looks like the picture on the box cover there. You know, you want it to match up what the company was trying to do with this ERP package. And I guess probably the last one, since I'm limited to four, is not being afraid of non-traditional approaches. I think one case I ran into, and was this same aeronautics company, they had decided to use a time and attendance software that had to be interfaced in. And as we got into this, we found out this software was just full of bugs. It was a mess. And we weren't getting nowhere with the traditional, hey, here's an issue, send it in. They come back with a fix. It doesn't work. So we said, after a long list of those, I said, I want you to send the developer team into our building, which they did, unbelievably. And they were there for about 2 to 3 months till we got this fixed and we could look these developers who were very uncooperative, look them in the eye, and they could sense the pain that we were going through. And then they finally got it working, but the current process was not going to work. So I think not being afraid to try some non-traditional approaches without jeopardizing the project or, you know, breaking the bank or anything, of course, or any no one getting hurt does achieve the results.
Sure.
Those are just a couple there that come to mind.
Good. Good. So it sounds like it, with your last point there, it sounds like a degree of innovation and creativity comes in handy. You know, Greg, you have an article titled Data Analytics for Performance, and we'll put this in the show notes for our listeners too. So we'll have the link there. But you state that, quote, and I'm going to share this with our listeners, as a consultant, the tools you use are as pivotal to success as the expertise and know-how you bring to your clients. Information is power when used effectively being the key, for clients in a way that can bring insights, decisiveness, and foresight to the engagement. Greg will help you see the power of big data and how it can be leveraged in your business and for your clients. So Greg, my question for you is, how do you do that exactly? You know, that is, how do you increase the value to clients with analytics software?
I tell you, Jack, to me, the data analytics capability that's out there, the affordability, the availability, and the ease of integrating it in there is the new news that 25, 26 years ago when the ERP exploded on the scene, it's the equivalent of that. It basically provides the way of using your data, which is equivalent, say, using your own DNA to come up with remedies versus external medicine, using your own data to basically manage your business. And I think the tools, you know, having a good data analytics software is critical. And I mentioned that example about that aircraft tier one supplier. They could not manage their work orders effectively. And just having the data analytic package that brought it in, gave them a collective view, and pointed them into how to prioritize their work on a daily basis, in some cases a near real-time basis, and also generate workflow as part of the process, is pretty close to automating the process as you can get. So I think the key is to take advantage of these data analytic packages, but you need some guidance on this. Just like you go to the doctor for advice, go to the integration consultants and basically have them help pick a good package, pick out the right capability, how to basically implement that and take your ERP system and maybe help turn a, you know, Chevrolet into a BMW that does a whole lot more functionality and is a lot more fun to drive.
Exactly. So, you know, and too, Greg, well, you just talked about data migration, right, as being one of your key important success factors in a previous question. We know the value of preventing this idea of garbage in, garbage out. For me, it's always been analytics software, data analytics, business intelligence. Man, that is so much fun and it's so useful and it brings such a return to the company. And especially, you know, there's some great tools, as you described, they have all the bells and whistles, right? I mean, mobile, drill down, business intelligence, dynamic, and a lot of cool things. But I think the key is too, is kind of going back to what you said earlier with data migration. That's all great, but you need the proper foundation before you get to that point. So I think that's really just this idea that, frankly, you preach the gospel on, and that's the idea of functional optimization and data migration, especially because those are fundamental to getting the real advantage out of analytics software, business intelligence. So that's why, you know, there's so much emphasis has to be put on that, because then that's when you really realize the great benefit and return on investment for analytics software and business intelligence.
No, we're on the same page, Jack. Those two elements really, I think, are the key to really automating the business processes and making them tremendously more manageable for the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. Great insight. Again, appreciate it. So I do want to share one more article with our listeners that you wrote, and you had an article, Five Keys to Execute Profitable Growth, in which you state that plan, find, manage, measure, implement are the five key areas. You then go on to add that, quote, there's no magic formula to execute growth in business. However, there's a set of business decisions and actions needed to achieve goals, some operational and some strategic. Dr. Deming, the great process and automotive quality guru, and I would agree, had a set of tenets for business to improve and therefore grow and prosper, end quote. Can you share with our audience some of the influences that he had on your approach to process optimization through his teaching? Since you're like me, Greg, you've mentioned him several times in this interview. So specifically, some of the influences that he had on your approach to process optimization through his teachings and some of his approach to enabling profitability growth through organizational capability.
Yeah, I really had the privilege at General Motors. We had Dr. Deming come in once a month. I was in engineering, and he would go over one of his 14 points and how it might apply to our business. So I think the main influencer to me, he was a big on gathering the data to really understand what's happening, since he was the father of statistical process control, what's happening to the process, and then document it. One of my colleagues that you know, David Stefanik, restated in his book, he referred to Dr. Deming, said, if you can't document what you're doing, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that to me, so true. Many times we come into a client and the first thing we have to do is document the current process. And no one has done it previously, or if they did, it was years ago and not in play anymore. So in many cases, documenting the processes has turned on the light bulb, because people see what an ERP system does. They see the upstream and the downstream impact of the processes they're involved with. And then they can basically get an idea of what has to happen. Some of these changes become obvious then with that visibility. I think that's what an ERP system can do. Unless you have people around the same table in a room every day, you can do it through this ERP system. So he was a big influencer on, let's get the data, use your own data to help you improve your operation. I think another major influence that struck me was his tenet that employees are trying to do the best job, the tools they've got. And if they don't have good tools and they don't have good processes, they're definitely held back. So it's really, I think it's incumbent on us as consultants in the ERP area to help them get the best process, the best systems, the best tools to help them do their job, you know, a lot more effectively, a lot more efficiency, and definitely they can feel better about what they've done during the course of the day. A lot less arguments, because everybody can be more on the same page, because there's not the mystery of how plan A does it versus plan B versus plan C. They're doing it the same way with the same data and the same fields. I think I try to wrap around some of his teachings, and it's sometimes you can do it unknowingly, but I think David Stefanik captured it well in his book.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, for our listeners, I will include in our show notes for Greg's episode here some notes and articles by Dr. Deming, who, by the way, Greg, that must have been extraordinary to be able to work with such a great mind and, I guess, process guru and automotive guru. So that's pretty cool. But I also include a link to, as Greg mentioned, David Stefanik's book. And by the way, David was on our podcast and we were grateful for that. And we'll include his link as well. So as a fellow practitioner, yourself and many others that we know in our field, and including David, we absolutely benefit from learning from our colleagues and our friends, both boots on the ground as well as researchers. If you had to distill your work into three or four sentences, or try your best, what would you say to our ERP organizational change practitioners and to our listeners? What are the highlights of advice that you would give them in terms of realizing ERP organizational change success?
Okay. I guess, Jack, what I would say is, first and foremost, it's very critical to have the organizational business processes, the relational data, the organizational roles to be in sync with the ERP system, the way it's set up to perform effectively. It does require a lot of planning and, you know, client participation, as you know. And to use the car analogy, again, in spades, for all systems to work in sync versus separately, you've got to have a common approach to make this happen. It's got to be centralized, but also adapt to, you know, local, regional needs where required. But it's important to basically get the best knowledge that there is. And that's what our job is as consultants, to lead the way, to provide the knowledge share and the transfer to help lead the clients, lead their organization. They need to lead it, but we are right there supporting them. David used the term two in a box. We did that at IBM, two in a box. And you have the customer and the consultant working together. And mm-hmm. because the consultant can help connect the dots is what we do, and then help the client really create an overarching process to execute this integrated system. It's a very powerful tool. It's got to be set up correctly, and it's got to be synced up with all these elements, or the vehicle system, if you will, is not going to roll very effectively. That's very important. I also think we've talked about data analytics. It's critical to use all the tools, current technology, to bring to bear on this system. The capability for data analytics expanded very rapidly, much faster than ERP capability here over the past few years. So let's harness that and harness all the capability, including the workflow capability in some of these packages, and really, you know, turbocharge your ERP system to a little different level. This system capability has really emerged quite a bit over the last few years, and let's help our clients really take advantage of the technology, especially as they're coming back from a very rough year. And in many cases, there's fewer employees to assist in getting the work done. So they need better systems, better tools. Let's help them do that. And finally, we need to help the client develop their capabilities, support the ongoing transformation of the business. I use the terms of Center of Excellence as a vehicle to do that. The ERP Excellence, Center of Excellence approach is really about retaining and using the knowledge of the super users, and to keep that technical knowledge active and alive and updated to help the body of the end users. And that's a best practice. So I guess to net it out, having a team whose responsibility to maintain the system, improve the functionality, implement any new rollouts, if you have a new geography, a new business unit, is a very good practice to have that collective team that basically supports the organization. So it basically marshals all those skills into a pretty powerful entity, and that's really what you want to have to make these systems really work well.
Yeah.
Three key ones for me.
That's great. Greg, thank you so much for your time, your expertise, your experience, and your insight. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you, Jack. I appreciate the opportunity, and look forward to any future sessions or any follow-ups that we may need and to help our clients.
You bet. You bet. Thank you again, and be well, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks, Jack.
Please join us next week as I interview our co-host, Jonathan. Jonathan is known for his passion in sharing perspectives around change management. We will discuss with Jonathan his thoughts on facilitating creative problem solving and implementing practical solutions. Jonathan also has a reputation for his collaborative, optimistic, and responsible style that brings out the best in others. Let's discuss with Jonathan his thoughts on creating progress and results in the most challenging of change management projects. Looking forward to having you join us next week.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on today's episode. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP and organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. We invite you to leave us feedback and a review, because we want to make this the most useful and insightful podcast you listen to. And we need your help to do so.
Thank you, listeners, for being with us again this week as we seek to, one, promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community, two, contribute to the field of ERP organizational change, and three, bring research and practice closer together. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice and stories. Our podcast will draw on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience.
From everyone here on the team, Jack and myself, we wish you a great week, and we hope to see you again soon on another episode.
Hashtag the ERP Organizational Change Journal. Have a fantastic week.
Bye for now.